When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to The Ancient World, a podcast with Greek myth and philosophy, symbolic readings of the biblical stories, the Roman Empire, and the renewal and rebirth of the Florentine Renaissance. And today we're going to talk a little bit about what is sometimes called the mystical age, or the period between very roughly 500 to 1100s, as this kind of bulk of history that is after the church founders, but it's also before Aquinas and Dante. So we're going to open up this as a topic. But first, we have a bit of housekeeping. The first big news is that we are now announcing our new morning show. So we have an extra podcast, a companion podcast, which is called Ancient World Morning Show. We're going to put a link in the description. And we're doing now every morning 5 minutes, and we are doing a little walkthrough of Dante's Purgatory. So this is more just like picking out some highlights and some inspiration and inputs for thought. And we're going to do more or less every day with Dante, but also some other things and some news and things we read for inspiration and for just having a good morning with a good cup of coffee. And just to recap, we're now at we've done 5 chapters of the Purgatory. So it's just a nice reminder that the second book is about rebirth, it's about renewal. It's very hopeful and kind of, you have lots of visual beauty. There are this brightening of the mood in so many different aspects of the storytelling from Dante, and so much more humor. So it's a joy to go through it again, and especially just the beginning with meeting Cato, which is very funny, and like the first boat coming with an angel, and then the sunrise, and then how it describes nature, and this little miracle in the beginning when Cato tells Virgil to pull up a reed and put it in on the waist of Dante as a symbol of humility. But then when Virgil pulls up the reed, like, as it's quoted, as a miracle, immediately a new reed has grown up, which is the whole renewal and transformation and just rebirth organically, but also spiritually for Dante. And for the story, and then to some extent when we read it as well. So hope some of you would like to follow the morning show as well. For other people that we've been working with lately and we had on this podcast, so Sean has made one new video about the Great Flood and updated the front page on the YouTube channel. It looks really great. So that's also a great place to get some inspiration and some nice learning about mythology. And then Greg from Exiting the Cave, who's also been on this podcast a few times, he has started a new Boethius series, like 10, 20 minutes reading from Boethius, The Consolation of Philosophy, on his locals community. And then Dan Scheffler, he has some plans and some announcements coming in the coming month or two about new projects. So we're following that as well. And finally, we also have updated our Patreon a little bit. So those of you who want to join in and get a bit more, some extra podcasts and join in the community for conversations, you can just go to patreon.com/ancientworld. Okay, so now for the book we're going to talk about today. It's a great book. It's called Late Medieval Mysticism. It's written by Ray C. Petrie. And this book is it gives a great framing to look at this era, which is called more like the mystical or like the mysticism age. We touched on this several times. So you have many big names in this. Dionysius is one of the biggest ones. Saint Bernard is also a very big one. We're going to put in just 2 quotes from Bernard here. One is a short one. It's really nice. So he says, "You will find something more in woods than in books. Trees and stones will teach you that which you can never learn from masters." So it's a part of this love of nature and the more simple life, and then how that could also be a portal or an opening or a connection to something more spiritual or more divine or something more deeper and just like a natural, in the sense that you're also in nature, but it's a place for contemplation and a deeper sense of being also. And another quote from him that we had on the morning show this morning is both profound, but it's also a practical advice. And the quote is this: "The man who is wise, therefore, will see his life as more like a reservoir than a canal. The canal simultaneously pours out what it receives. The reservoir retains the water till it is filled, then discharges the overflow without loss to itself. Today, there are many in the church who act like canals. The reservoirs are far too rare. You too must learn to await this fullness before pouring out your gifts. Do not try to be more generous than the divine." So this is from the On the Song of Songs by Bernard of Clairvaux, who is the mystic at the end of the Paradise, the last three cantos. So then continuing with the book, The Late Medieval Mysticism, it has a nice introduction because it explains an important point. That mysticism means more things today than it did in this period from the 5 to 1200s. At that time, it was more, the terminology was more about contemplation and the contemplative life than the mystical life. So it's important to have this like as a background. And then how the contemplative life is the overall theme and more kind of what they were thinking or how they used the word. It's also, if for those who listen to the last season and then when Dante comes to the sphere of the contemplatives and with the ladder as a symbol and how the monasteries are these kind of glowing and burning spiritual places where people create this connection to the transcendent and to this glowing energy of what is beyond, and then expand their spiritual understanding as well as the intellectual and the rational understanding. This is becoming more clear if as we now are looking into this period between the church founders and the scholastic movement. So there are several quotes here from the book. Just wanted to mention a few of them. So they are underlining here that the mystics were quite understandably to be found, therefore, among the ascetics and in the monasteries. And then also the end or the objective that they're trying to work towards is, quote, "This end is the vision of God, that is communion with the divine," which is also described in the last tercet of the Paradise. When the person is, it's like his mind is dissolving into becoming the whole of the universe, or then like the total unity with the divine. And a final point here, which is interesting, is that they're drawing the lines from the earliest Greeks. And it's very interesting to think of, for example, Plato as more of a mystic or a spiritual contemplative person than as a philosopher, in the way that philosophy is often portrayed today as more like a like analytical, rational, logic approach to understanding the world. The Greeks had a much more broader understanding of what philosophy was, and a philosopher was also much more of a balanced thinker between the rational and also the spiritual. So a few quotes from or about Plato is this, that when Plato talks about the soul, Plato says that the soul, quote, "having lived before its temporal birth in the presence of pure being and the contemplation of eternally unchanging reality, the soul still possesses the power to recognize and apprehend this true reality. And true knowledge finds its object not in visible things, in their constitutive elements, or in their ordering, but in the invisible world of essences. The soul, having pre-existently beheld the true being and absolute truth, now seeks to regain this vision. To that end, sense passions must be abased with the aid of reason. And then the soul finally looks upon the good itself in its very essence, over and beyond its reflections in the natural phenomena. So this is the world of forms that is very much kind of the center of Plato's thinking, is in some ways by its nature more of a mystical spiritual construct or experience or a state of your mind and your soul. So he concludes this part with Plato saying, however unsynthesized and ambiguous the mystical and the more learned aspects of Plato may be, these qualities are not opposed. It is in the mystical Plato that Plato the scholar finds his light. And then we're going to have just two more. This is Aristotle and also one of our big favorites, Dionysius. So with Aristotle, he says that Aristotle generally think of the perfect man as being concerned contemplatively with metaphysical matters while given actively to practical issues. So this Aristotle is concerned about the practical, but he is also acknowledging the metaphysical, and also in the book Metaphysics, the reality of the metaphysical, which is then one place that could overlap with a more mystical, contemplative, spiritual way of thinking about the world. And then we're just going to jump to Dionysius, the Areopagite. So he is around the year 500. And it opens here with, to exaggerate the role of Dionysius the Areopagite in medieval mysticism would be difficult indeed. True mysticism focuses the mysterious decoding of the Christian allegories to the angels know so well. Sorry, that the angels know so well. Through the angelic beings and in the line of proper ecclesiastical tradition, we may come to know the allegories also. So this is super interesting, both because it's emphasizing the allegories, and also we've been talking and reflecting on the nine levels of angelical beings, what it means, like the angels, archangels, like the messengers and the source of the messengers, at the two lowest levels, and at the top, especially the two top levels of knowledge and love, or streams of knowledge and pure love, as the two top levels of spiritual beings or forces or just like things that are shaping the world and history and existence in a sense, like in a broader sense. So this is the beauty of Dionysius. So we're going to end this episode here. So this is just a little taste of, or a little setup of the background for a different way of thinking about both this time period between 500-600 to 1100-1200s, and also how you can see what is drawing from the ancient Greeks and gradually in many of the church founders. We might also put in Gregory of Nyssa in this, because he's also often having kind of his main foot is in the more symbolic spiritual. But we also, as always on this podcast in itself, want to keep a balance of being on the secular and the intellectual, and then gradually exploring these other areas. Okay, so that's all we had for this episode. So just want to say like one last time, if you want to engage with other people who are listening or have some questions for me, you can just go to the Patreon page and get into the group forum on Discord, and we have already many great discussions there with Greg and Sean and with Dan as well. So with that as a final note, I just want to say, as always, thank you for listening and have a great day, and see you again soon here on the Ancient World podcast.